Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Dr. Michael Canaris joins us again, an associate professor of ecclesiology and systematic theology at Loyola University in Chicago. He was with us yesterday and had some very helpful insight. What an interesting title that you have, by the way, doctor. What does all of that mean? What is, in fact, the thrust of your studies?
So ecclesiology is the study of the church. And so, again, thanks for having me. I didn't lead off with that. But what a joy to be able to talk about the church and the church's engagement with the world, with people of all faiths and none at this moment that's so historic in Chicago.
I think we sometimes segregate the secular and the religious world, but this really is kind of a rare opportunity to marry those two things and think about who we are as a people, almost as a species, not to get too cosmic about it. But I mean, it really is a rare kind of conversation that we're able to have right now.
Sure. And I think that one of the ways of framing that would be to talk about, you know, Pope Leo's service in Latin America, right? So that he was here in the United States, but spent decades not in Lima, in the central city, but in a far-flung diocese, like living in solidarity with the poor in many ways. And so he brings all of that. He brings Chicago. He brings Latin America. He brings a Vatican position. He brings the Augustinian thrust and charism and the heart of a missionary. It's an unbelievable confluence of events.
Confluence, indeed. I mean, because one of the criticisms of the church is that it is so wealthy. It's this hierarchical global organization that it would pick as its CEO a guy, you know, in the jungle there in Central or South America is hard to get your head around, isn't it?
It is. It is. And you know that his choice of name says so much, because if there's one thing I keep saying to people as I have these conversations, it's to look up this document, Rerum Novarum. It was written by Pope Leo XIII, and it speaks to the church's engagement with labor rights and unions and wise stewardship of finances, even the excesses of unbridled capitalism and how that can be dangerous. And so the church's engagement with the world, there's obviously a nod to that in his choice, along with Leo I's peacekeeping efforts to stop Attila the Hun from sacking Rome.
I guess it shouldn't surprise you or me then, having talked to you, that one of the first things I saw this morning was a statement from a labor union in Chicago heralding this particular pope's name and mission.
Sure. It makes so much sense. And then, you know, that I have lots of colleagues who were involved in this big $10 million project that's trying to implement and resource Pope Francis's agenda on college campuses throughout the country. And he's been very supportive of that. And two of the schools involved in this, in the 16, are Villanova and CTU. They both have, he's a graduate of both. And so his background in math and finances, he brings all of that, but with that pastoral inflection that Pope Francis always talked about, not having a desk-bound theology. His theology is really one of the world.
Somebody said, I wonder if we'll ever find out who number two was, but maybe whoever number two was maybe didn't get many votes at all. He had to hit a threshold of 2/3 and did so in 2 days, and he might have had 9/10 of the votes. Do they ever give us the final numbers?
Sure. I'll tell you who to follow on that. Jerry O'Connell is probably the best Vatican reporter in the English-speaking language. He has a great book on the conclave about Pope Francis, because even though that is kept secret and the ballots are destroyed, people want to mark history, so very often off the record. And he has an unbelievable knack for this thing that he will be the best resource in the future. I hope he writes a book about this conclave the way he did around Francis's.
Some folks have said to me, I miss the old conclave. We didn't have enough of it, the intrigue every day. But after 2 days, the smoke changed color. Were you surprised with the speed with which they were able to pick a new pope?
Yeah, I was, to be perfectly candid. So what I keep being asked, what drew people to him? It has to be his personal holiness, because the idea that they could coalesce so quickly around a figure, you know, when the voters are coming from many backgrounds, many continents, many places on the ideological spectrum, he could not have been elected without some centrists and some moderates and even some mildly conservative voters. Now, the last conclave was undoubtedly a referendum on Pope Francis's vision and agenda, but it's quite clear that the side that voted, literally, I guess, voted and also sort of was moved by this outward rushing church is going to be in continuity, I think, with what's to come.
It's funny, though. Sometimes the experts all say something, 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 and then the results are quite different. And this would be an example of that. How is it, then, that the odds, if I had placed a $10 bet on this guy, I would have $50,000 today. How is it that the experts, and that's true, by the way, how is it that the experts didn't see this coming?
Well, I mean, I think that the largest thing, I've talked to a lot of people in Rome since this has happened, and many of them thought he was a perfect candidate. I mean, he had, you know, background in a diocese, he had background in the Curia. But the idea of making the two most influential people in the world, the U.S. president and the Pope, where the entire globe has to respond, I think there was a thought that that may not happen. And it did happen, and now we'll have to see what that holds for the future.
Will there be any more conversation, or what do you make of some of the scandals that have plagued the church and a church over which he oversaw had another one of those abuse scandals with boys, and maybe he didn't do enough to intervene. Maybe he allowed lodging for a priest too close to a school. We're all catching up on some of those stories, and I don't know how much we should invest in them. What's your thought about that?
Yeah, well, I have to lead any question around this by saying that I want to make clear that it's not a defensive posture, right? Accepting unacceptable behavior is never in accord with living out the gospel. So it's not a defensive position to say that we have to investigate this. We have to explore it with full transparency. And I do believe that he's going to move forward in terms of building on the work that has been done to protect vulnerable populations. And hopefully, if there were mistakes made in the past, tragic mistakes, mistakes that can never be excused, that he would have the courage to admit that and move forward. Now, I'm not saying that's the case. I don't know the ins and outs of those particular stories with the depth and knowledge that people need to investigate them. But I do think that his overall humility, kindness, brilliance that have come across from those who have known him a long time and those who have interacted with him in a variety of settings would lead to some at least authenticity around issues like this.
You know, I asked a newsman earlier on our show today, Connell McShane from News Nation, if he felt that if he is hearing that this was the church signaling, and particularly to the United States and particularly to the president and vice president and the people making decisions about policy in America, which is maybe a little, geocentric way to look at it. But do you think that weighed in his selection? The United States is the world's biggest player on so many fronts. Was this the church maybe pressuring the USA a little bit?
Well, I don't know about pressuring. I mean, I bristle at the terms of like pressuring and factions, because by and large, all of the cardinals are on one team, right? They want to proclaim Christ's resurrection, and they want a capable and enthusiastic spokesperson to do that, to lead us as a community. And so I do think, though, that what is happening in the United States across all kinds of different socioeconomic and cultural boundaries is front and center to the minds of the entire planet. We know that. We see what's happening in terms of stock markets around the world, for example. And so the idea of someone who could understand what is happening in America, who could speak to it powerfully as one informed and living out the gospel. That's not to say that anyone else is or is not, but that this particular figure is called to do so, I think had to play into the minds of the cardinals who chose him to be our pastor, our shepherd.
Right. So if it wasn't the plan, there is the effect of that. I haven't seen the posts or the things that he forwarded along, but evidently where other cardinals or individuals were critical of the U.S. immigration policies, for instance, he essentially liked that. He endorsed that. And maybe you would expect that from somebody who's, a cardinal. is a man of the cloth, but that lands here in the United States. People notice that sort of thing. And you would imagine that the other cardinals were well aware of his position on those issues as well.
Yeah, I mean, that issue in particular is a defining characteristic of our age, of living in the 21st century. I mean, it is the age of migration. I think that's what future historians will look back and describe our days as the chief issues, perhaps along with the ecology and other issues. But because there are so many people, more than ever before in human history, on the move for all kinds of reasons, you know, the church has to speak to that. And I think that his fluency in that is going to continue to lead the conversation.
One last question for you. These issues notwithstanding, relative to the church itself, though, do you expect some changes in the way the church conducts its business, women as priests or other religious issues that the church has struggled with? I wonder what his influence will be. How much can he do? Will the Catholic Church be different as a result of him?
Well, the Catholic Church is always different. I mean, this is what I've been telling people. There have never been Christians alive that have had to deal with artificial intelligence, as an example. And so as we wrestle with new problems that were not the same problems of the 18th century or the 14th century or the 3rd century, the church always has to respond with creative and faithful responses on how to live out the gospel. And so I think that he will certainly do that. The church continues to develop and move throughout history, wrestling with the issues of our day and every day. And so there will be changes. Now, the changes come in how the truths of the faith are articulated and presented and interpreted, because goodness and truth and beauty are unchanging phenomena. They're the descriptions of a merciful God. But yet, how we live them out in our human longing and finite minds to understand that continues to change in every generation.
Sure, but specifically, just pick women and women priests. Do you think that's something he's interested in?
I do not think he will move towards women's ordination of priests. I think that there could be a possibility to further the conversation around the ongoing study of women deacons in the church. And so I know a lot of organizations that are involved in that, and they're excited about his election.
Yeah. Any last thing you want us to hear from you today, Michael?
No, I just think it's an amazing moment for the city of Chicago. I mean, the next stage of church history, probably for 20 years, he's a relatively young man, is going to run right through Chicago. I mean, that's incredibly exciting and enlivening and just an amazing moment that we are all sharing together as a city.
I said this earlier, and maybe you'll just give us one last reflection on it, but it just makes the papacy so much more relatable. And maybe in that way, the church too. To think that I can go to the same booth he sat in at Aurelio's and have a pizza, that he plays tennis, that he may have been to the same Jewel Osco I was at, is hard to get your head around.
It really is. Yeah, I saw the interviews with his brothers and things.
Yeah.
You know, I've been joking. My wife's from Argentina, so I've been joking for 12 years that she's my second favorite Argentine. I never thought I would live to hear her say that I would be her second favorite Chicagoan.
Nice to talk to you, Michael. I hope this isn't our last conversation. Dr. Michael Canaris is an associate professor of ecclesiology and systematic theology at Loyola University here in Chicago. Stay well, sir. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.